Tonight I'm going to introduce the very complex subject of the seven rays as these relate to human psychological complexes. In my previous books, I have approached the subject of the psychology of the seven rays from cosmic origins, from cosmic approaches, talking about the origin of the seven rays as springing from the seven stars there. I've talked about the seven rays from the point of view of the human personality and how they permeate that personality and bring pressures to bear on it right throughout the person's life, and how it is possible to analyze the rays of someone by a system of cross-questioning. And tonight we're going to try and relate, or correlate is the better word, correlate the signs of the zodiac with psychological complexes and with the seven rays, the psychology of the seven rays. And it would be just an introductory talk here tonight. Until now, we have already begun to investigate the world of the numinosum. We only know this, that whenever man repeats an activity on the planet, he creates something inwardly in the unconscious world, which is a reflection of his activities, and which becomes laden with energy. And so when he repeats an activity again later, that activity is fed from within, from the reciprocal image of it that lies in the unconscious. And some of the activities that we undertake on the earth, and some of the images that we focus on, are more laden with energy than others, much more laden with energy than others. We know that certain religious symbols have a tremendous numinosum about them. They can call forth responses from the unconscious that can energize a person who is exhausted. Religious themes, religious images can bring down from the unconscious amounts of energy quite unrelated to those associated with ordinary symbols. So this is a concept that you have to get into your mind right from the beginning, that even in astrology, some signs of the zodiac are more numinostic than others. Some aspects in astrology are more numinostic than others. Aspects that incorporate the midheaven of the chart are highly numinostic. Aspects that incorporate the ninth and tenth house, or the ascendant, or the sign of Leo. There are certain regions of a horoscope which are very, very laden with numinostic energies. Now, we have talked about instincts already. In my last lecture, we talked about instincts. We saw how animals repeat activities because they have to in order to survive, and how these activities conjure up numinostic energies in the inner worlds, in the unconscious. And animals not yet born, when they begin to perform a certain activity or action, are fed with energies that have been stored there by the species in their activities through the centuries. We've talked about instincts and how these numinostic energies press on the animals to make them undertake certain activities, which we call instincts. We saw how man's instinct diminishes. As he comes out of savagery, his instinct diminishes, and instead it is replaced with intuition. So we say from instinct to intuition. And we know that this can be explained through the simple references to man possessing five functioning chakras. And of these chakras, there is a high preponderancy of them in the upper region of the body. Whereas in animals, there are only three chakras. And one of them is sited at the base of the spine, leaving two others, both of them below the diaphragm. And so animals are driven by numinostic energies through these chakras and their effects on organs in what we call instinct. Of course, there are hereditary factors as well, and so on. But with man, instinct diminishes, and because he has opened more centers and higher centers, he is open to intuition. He is open to guidance from the higher self which has existed long before, or the elements have existed long before he materialized his physical body. Or, if you like, the monad energizes his soul both between lives and during life. And man gets some guidance from his soul and very, very little help from instinct. Now, on the board, I have put an illustration to indicate how, according to the esoteric propositions, as these relate intimately to the Jungian propositions, the human personality is formed. The human personality functions, I should say. All of us know that modern psychology talks about the personality as being the interplay of our hereditary equipment, the equipment that we're born with, the genes and chromosomes themselves, and the body that they have fashioned, and the environment into which we are thrust. Our parents, our homes, our cultures, where we live, and so on. And so we say, H times E, or hereditary equipment times environment, gives us the personality. And that is the mundane attitude to the subject, the mundane attitude to the subject. But the Jungian philosophy, as well as the esoteric, proposes that the personality is impinged upon by pressures which lie in the unconscious. This is the conscious world here. This is the unconscious. And these energies that impinge upon the personality give it dispositions, give it complexes, a word that Jung himself coined, a term, a phrase, a concept that he himself coined, gives the element of character. And so we can trace the origins of these dispositions and characters to the noumenosum, a huge reservoirs of energy that lie in the precincts of the planet and which have been contributed to by men's activities on the planet for countless centuries. And so there has built up, as it were, these vast reservoirs of archetypal energies in the unconscious. And they constantly press for expression in what we would register in our dreams, perhaps, as images. These images, in turn, laden with energy, produce in the lowest individuals or in animals instincts, and these, in turn, or the images directly, produce the dispositions of our nature, of our personality. And they are unconscious in the great part, and they constantly, as I say, impinge upon our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. So here we have the embracing, the wedding, as it were, of the Jungian concept and of the esoteric. Now let's see what Jung called a complex. What did he mean by a complex? He said that a complex was a group of repressed ideas, a group of repressed ideas that were linked together, a group of similar ideas, if you wish, that were repressed, held down, not expressing themselves in the unconscious, laden with energy, powerful or weak, which grouped themselves together about a particular emotional tone, a particular emotional tone. And so we might have a complex about hunger, a complex about hunger. And people who starved during the war in concentration camps as prisoners would have a very different attitude from those individuals who've never known hunger. One of the things that appalled me in my first visits to America was the appalling waste of food. The waste, the wicked, wicked waste. When I can remember mothers fighting each other to get to the garbage cans in Italy during the war. Our garbage cans, the army garbage cans, from which they foraged food for their children, their starving children. And so I have a complex about waste, especially food. Now, it's a matter of opinion, which isn't important here, as to whether the conflict, the complex that I have about waste is a good complex, whether it adds to the character or subtracts to the character, or eventually the disposition and personality of me. That's not under question here, the morals and ethics. I'm merely giving an example. And so there are hundreds of complexes. The emotional tone there was one of seeing people throw dignity to the winds, to see mothers, women, friends fighting each other, clawing, kicking, tearing at each other, sisters even, fighting to get food that we had thrown away. Now, that in itself provides an emotional tone. That's the important thing I want you to get here. And every time I do an astrological aspect down in the dining hall with you, I try and stress the importance of an emotional tone. Whether there is the emotional tone, for instance, of an ominous matter, something which is serious and hanging over your heads, or whether it's a happy matter. Then I mix with this tone whether it is a medical matter, whether it is an emotional matter concerning domesticity or relationships within the family. And so complexes, according to Jung, are built around an emotional focus. And I gave you an example of an emotional focus of mine on the witnessing of the degradation where human dignity is lost, fighting over food. And so there's the emotional content, if you wish, around which the complex was built. And so Jung said a complex is the grouping of psychic elements about emotionally toned contents. About emotionally toned contents. He also said that a complex is a group of repressed ideas interlinked into a complex whole, and that this complex besets the individual. I said impinges on his consciousness. And every time I am confronted with waste and food waste in particular, this complex that I have that besets me is released into me and surfaces and manifests, perhaps in anger or irritation or whatever personality expression suits the occasion. That's what you want to understand. And so these complexes that that exist and Jung describe impel us to think in a certain way, impel us to feel in a certain way, or to act in a habitual pattern. And this was the term that Jung introduced into psychiatry. Now, its importance to the esoteric person is to recognize its existence. Man, know thyself, as I'm always telling you in my seminars. Think of the Delphic injunction. Man, know thyself. If you know yourself, you can change yourself. If you don't know what you are, you can't change what you are. And it's important to know that our awareness, our consciousness, is constantly being pressured upon by hidden elements lying in the unconscious. Now you would say, well, why must the esoteric person worry about that? The esoteric person worries about it because, or he shouldn't worry about it, he should deal with it, because these complexes with their energies tend to create barriers which wall a man off from his higher self. They wall a man off from his higher self. Many of the complexes are extremely negative and limiting. And whilst these create a fuzz, a wall of low-grade energy around the personality, it's just about impossible for the voice of the silence to be heard, let alone heeded. And so, complexes are important. Now, if you look at the board again, we could say that a complex is built around a nuclear element. I try to describe in as frank terms as I could the complex that I have about wastage, which would be Neptune in my chart. It would be Neptune in my chart. I'm not saying that out of idle remark. I want you to understand that you have represented in your horoscope the symbols of every complex that impinges on your consciousness. It's all there. Even if it's only a simple, plain aspect like Venus in the fourth house, or whatever it is. Very simple one, but definitely there. Now, the nuclear element around which the elements of the complex are built lies in the unconscious, and I've depicted it there as a five-pointed star, and I've chosen the five-pointed star as a very important symbol in occultism. A little earlier I said that the sign Leo was important from a numinostic point of view. The throne, the throned monarch, the crown, the features of somebody under show, the focus of attention for the nation, the cynosure of all eyes, remembering that energy follows thought. Energy follows thought. Think of the leader, think of the monarch, think of the focal point for the nation, and the nation feeds energy to that region. And I said this was true of Leo. Why then should I choose the five-pointed star as a symbol which is laden with numinostic energy? It has five points to it. The fifth house of Leo. And so, just as Leo in the fifth house is a place for accumulating energies, numinostic energies which give an element of scintillation and glamour that attracts and compels, and remember that the fifth house in Leo rules the cobra, the seated snake, the cobra. And the cobra has the quality of fascination. Fascination. fascinating its individual, rather its victims. Now, we're looking again at the blackboard, and we see that the nuclear element, a large five-pointed star, the symbol for it, lies in the unconscious part of the psyche. The unconscious part of the psyche. The psyche is the total nature of the man, conscious and unconscious. And the nuclear element lies in the unconscious part of the individual psyche. Now, around the nuclear element, you can see constellating elements, and so associated with my thing about waste, and you can have a thing which is the soul's purpose, which is a very high quality, and the thing that you have to do is the basic principle of functioning at Claregate. That everyone is encouraged to do their thing. Now, I didn't know what Betty Moseley's thing was. I certainly knew that it was not going to be the filing for the rest of her life. And if she is a brilliant cook, I would have loved it to have been that, but it wasn't to be that. In fact, she had a visionary dream when she was a little girl about her thing. And her thing turns out to be color separation of drawings, working for endless hours, night and day, on color separating drawings for the books. Now, isn't that true, Betty, that you had this visionary experience when you were a little girl, and sometime you can sit down and talk to this very wise person who's the perfect example of a second-ray personality. A second-ray personality and a first-ray soul. Here is a very good combination. She complements me exactly. I have a first-ray personality and a second-ray soul. I can't bear letter writing for 1 second. And these letters can be seen in the British Museum. I know that Joe's going to take you to the British Museum if there's time. If you haven't heard about it, Joe, you're hearing about it now for the first time. And one of the things you should see in the British Museum, apart from the lovely Egyptian collection, is the Mahatma letters. And these letters were written, supposedly, by the Master K.H., who was a second-ray individual, and the Master Kutumi, who was a first-ray individual, to Madame Blavatsky. And there is a difference between the two styles. The second-ray style is a flowing handwriting and a person that obviously likes writing letters. The first-ray type has a very crypt, short style of writing and very, very abrupt and to the point. So these are the lovely facets of human nature that you can derive once you begin to get into esoteric psychology. Now, your library downstairs is bulging with books on esoteric psychology, psychology of the rays, and so on. And you really should spend as much time as you can. You'll say, well, you haven't much time. Well, that's good not to have any time. At least you are being completely and fully occupied, as you should be. You should seek out these things. The ray psychology is a beautiful psychology. My youngsters can tell people's rays very quickly and come to conclusions about them and what they need merely by observing them and hearing them speak and watch them acting very quickly. Now, we're talking about the nuclear element and constellating elements about it. And in my case, going back to the matter of the complex about waste, minor elements constellating around the central nuclear element. And this is and all of them vibrating to the emotional quality of a feeling about waste through experiences I had seeing human dignity torn away from people. So there's the emotional tone, and now the constellating elements around the central theme there would be things like children, how important it is that children receive enough food to eat. That is one little constellating element in the total picture. I always have a thing today about garbage bins, and often have a feeling that perhaps the wealth of the nation lies in our garbage. You'd say strange thought, but an awful lot goes into the garbage cans that could feed people in different parts of the world. So these are minor elements around the central nuclear element. Now, have a look at that drawing again, and we could ring it round. We could ring that round, and we could say the total drawing represents a complex. The total drawing represents a complex. We may, for instance, call this complex the. We might call this complex, for instance, the apprenticeship complex. We'll talk about that later. It could be the Oedipus complex. It could be the complex that everyone seems to know, which is the inferiority complex. A complex. Now, the esoteric teaching goes along with this, except that we say that these minor elements can form groups of their own. We say that these are represented by aspects in astrology. These are represented by the aspects in astrology. When we're talking about an aspect, we'll come to some examples in a moment, some examples of complexes. For instance, the apprenticeship complex that I was talking about a moment ago is this one. Venus in Leo in the third house. Venus and Leo in the third house. The apprenticeship complex. The stage that most little boys go through in which they ape the father. They want to be what the father is. When they grow up, they want to be a milkman. When they grow up, they want to be an engine driver. They go through this apprenticeship complex, as it were. It's a healthy thing. They are fed by its energies. It performs a function in personality building. Now, a person might get hung up on this. Mark has a friend, for instance, who has remained a little boy all his life. And he's got all his toys in the ceiling of his new home. He's got his little train, locomotive, and carriages and rails going around in a special room set aside in the home in which he keeps his toys still. That sort of matter is a complex in an individual, and there would be definitely there fifth-ray qualities about that individual. He has remained a boy in some respects for most of his life, and that is a very common feature of people who have Leo strong in their horoscopes. Leo strong in their horoscopes. They remain the child, the boy, the young person, all their lives in some respect. And if I think this individual has Leo rising, Sun and Leo. And so here we have the apprenticeship complex with Venus in Leo in the third. And as Venus, sitting there, makes his stage in life in which he was a little boy and should be getting guidance from his father, makes that stage in life laden with numinosum, and he can't break away from it. Can't break away from it. Or if you like, you can do your own interpretation there. I don't have to tell you what to do. You can look at that and you can put the basic symbols. And you can say that the teacher is seated at school. The teacher, Venus, lord of the third house, which rules education. So Venus in the third, the teacher. Leo, the child or the boy. And the third house, the school. Combinations of this. And the boy has still got to complete his school days. Has not got out of his school days. The school days are there. His school days or his childhood surrounds him. Surrounds him. He's got a complex about him. Now, complexes, please don't think complexes are necessarily evil. They assist in the process of fashioning the personality. Then there is a Cain complex, and we'll be dealing with a few of these in the next few weeks. The Cain complex, in which there is rivalry between brothers. Rivalry between brothers. And so you can expect to have what house? Third house. Brothers and sisters. Brothers and sisters. Rules the third house. Cain and Abel. And you know, Cain and Abel exists in every one of us. And we don't just mean evil and good. Especially when you tread the path. This is true. When you tread the path, one of the signs that you are indeed getting down to the matter of discrimination is the facility with which you can swing from one view to another, to the opposite. One view to the opposite. I'll go along with this, and then a moment later you're thinking, I could equally go along with the opposite of that. And that's a characteristic of breaking the holds of the limiting background, and more than anything, of the mind itself. The fact that the rigidity that you've had all along, fixed views and attitudes, is beginning to break up. The Cain complex is a very interesting one. Gordon, later on, is going to talk to you about the UFO complex. The complex which emerges in people, into consciousness, under the guise of seeing UFO objects. Unidentified flying objects. What is it that they're seeing? Do they really see it? Do they have the experience? Well, he'll tell you about that. And so on. Many, many other complexes. One of them that relates to us esoterically is the Faust complex. The Faust complex. And you will see whether it's reading into Goethe or whether you read in Christopher Marlowe's play, Dr. Faustus, or read about Paracelsus, the poem by Robert Browning, who was fascinated by Paracelsus, and whom he energizes today. Paracelsus was a parallel to Faustus. And the complex that Faustus represents is alienation of power from God. The taking of power and using it for personality ends. That is, especially where there is an obsession for power. That is the Faustus complex. And I don't care. You can have my soul. I couldn't care less. Give me the power now. I want the new experience. I want the security drive satisfied. I want to have the response drive satisfied. I want it all and I want it now. Alienation of power from the higher self or from God. Milton wrote the whole of Paradise Lost, magnificent epic poem about Satan. who alienates power from God to himself, the fallen angels. So we have been looking in briefly tonight to the subject of complex.